to the Sim Racing Podcast, formerly known as and still known as the Joe Sixpack Racing Podcast. I'm Greg Dreis, your host, and tonight we're not talking the 802 Cup Series. We'll be wrapping that league up this weekend with our winners and everything as we head to Phoenix for the final race for season two. Big points battle going on. I myself am involved in a big points battle there, but we're way back in P16, 2 points out of the money. So if you're interested in the 802 Cup Series League, you can look us up on Facebook. Send us a message. We're going to be starting season three pretty soon and also starting the BG Graphics 802 Late Model Stock Series, which is going to be a lot of fun. The summer season is going to be a 21-week season. It's going to be more laid back because, you know, a lot of guys are going to be taking the summer off. I'm one of them. I'll be missing a lot of races as I head to the races. We race at 6:45 for practice on Sunday evenings, and green flag drops shortly after 7:10, 7:15 or so. We run next gen fixed series. So if you're interested, you could hook up with the 802 Cup Series League. Look us up on Facebook under 802 iRacing Leagues, or go straight to iRacing and send us a message and tell us what leagues you're interested in, maybe both, and we'll hook you up. And really good season this year and season two for the Cup Series. We have over $700 to $800 in prize money, and prize money goes all the way back to P15. So if I'm lucky, I'll get my $15 entry fee back, but I'm not getting my sponsor money back. So also like to thank BG Graphics for sponsoring the series, sponsor for the 802 series, and also will be on Ghost Racing Network for the Cup Series going forward. And Turn 3 Broadcasting will be broadcasting the late model series. So we got a special guest here tonight. And when I found out that my guest was also a Kansas City Barbecue Society guy, I'm like, wow, this is going to be a long night. So I think we're going to talk racing and talk barbecue. So if you're able to sit outside and tip back a glass of bourbon or a glass of Jack Daniels or something like that and throw something on the barbecue, we're going to have a good time tonight. So I want to introduce our guest for tonight and thank him so much for reaching out. Dave Duke, he's a former NASCAR official. He's worked for Furniture Row Racing, JD Motorsports, Randy McDonald Racing, Rick Ware Racing. Oh, Bob Kozlowski, he's a fabricator, a builder, and just an all-around racing guy. And barbecue, what more can you ask for? David Duke, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going, man? Everything going all right tonight?
Very good. When you told me you were Kansas City Barbecue Society, I'm like, that is the creme de la creme of, you know, barbecue sanctioning for judging all around the country. And then when I told you that I taught barbecue classes at my last job, which I did, you were like, wow, that's really cool. So I'm like settled in. I don't have gin. I just got back from the local farm brewery. So I got a can of brew over here and some nano distillery gin. And I'm just ready to settle in and talk racing to barbecue. How you doing?
That sounds like a damn good time.
That's a real good time. Oh, so we got lucky in New York, where one of the few good things, in my opinion, Governor Cuomo did was allow for the nano breweries and nano distilleries, with the only stipulation that is after 5 or 6 years of being in the business, 80% to 90% of your product had to come from New York or grown in New York. So it's really cool. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about yourself. I mean, it seems like you've run the gamut there as far as the NASCAR series. So tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you tonight?
I am in Sanford, Florida tonight. I would self-categorize myself as a unique iRacer.
Okay.
I'll take you back to the beginning. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee at the local drag strip there in Charleston called Union Hill Drag Strip. Mm-hmm. My dad drag raced my whole life, NHRA and IHRA. Spent a lot of time up at Beach Bend and Bowling Green as well.
Yep.
But 85, he finished fifth in the world in Super Rod and IHRA and won multiple Division II championships at NHRA. Wow. So naturally, I was just always around motorsports, always at the track.
Yeah.
kind of growing up and then in watching the progression of drag racing and NASCAR, I thought, well, hell, you can make a little bit more money circle track racing you can drag racing. So yep. I went to the National Auto Diesel College to learn sheet metal fabrication.
Oh, wow.
And learn through Kenny Trout, which is he built the inaugural pole sitter for the Brickyard 400.
No kidding.
The number one skull car, the Rick Mass car. He built that car. So he was my instructor over there, and Mr. Mike Lovern was my welding instructor.
Yep.
Just learned a lot about fabrication over there and moved over to North Carolina and was building cars and for some good teams and some good drivers. And, man, the sport is so political. I switched over to officiating with NASCAR, mm-hmm. and, man, spent 5 years there and then went and jumped back to a team over at Furniture Row in Colorado. And right about 2008, and the economy tanked, and
yep.
they laid us off, and I got out of the racing industry then. But I never lost track of motorsports. I still got a lot of friends down there in the garage.
That's cool. What was it like working for Furniture Row, being, I don't know, 12 or 1,500 miles away from the heartbeat of NASCAR?
It was unique, but as far away as it was still felt pretty connected.
Right.
Pretty constant flow of trailers coming in from North Carolina with chassis or engines, taking stuff over the dyno over there, the wind tunnels over there. You felt pretty connected, but you knew that you were kind of out on an island, so to speak. But it was pretty badass. I mean, it was wide open. Barney Visser was second to none as far as a team owner. I've worked with some really good team owners, but never a team owner that laid you off and gave you a severance package in the process, especially in the racing world. That was really cool. I got a lot of respect for that man.
Yeah. 2008 was, that was pretty rough. Let me see. I was 46 years old in 2008. We had three kids, just before 9/11, we had just purchased a glorified hunting camp up in the Adirondack Mountains. When I say glorified hunting camp, we had electricity, propane stove, propane refrigerator, no running water, no plumbing, and we had an outhouse. And 2008, yeah, cool. That was called, today they call it glamping. So, and 2008 came around, and I'm like, wow, I'm 46. I've got this property up there that I purchased and still owe some of the mortgage on. It was not a lot of money. I bought it for like $39,000, but I still had a mortgage on it, as well as paying my mortgage down here in just south of Albany, New York. And I said, you know what? Kids haven't been up there in a while. Came home one night after a weekend with the boys and told my wife we're selling. She started crying. And I said, wait a minute. When's the last time you were up there? She goes, I don't know. I said, 9 months. She says, all right. Things aren't looking good, so let's sell it and use the money for elsewhere. So we, like everybody else did 2008, you kind of did the cocooning thing, right? Kind of regrouped.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, I had to start over a lot of things.
Yeah. So where did you go after Furniture Row when during that downturn? What happened? Where'd you end up?
After I got out of the racing industry, like I said, I kept up with it, but I went to safety and construction.
Oh, cool.
Randomly got into that industry and has made a really good career out of it.
Now, what kind of safety and construction, and how did fabrication help you with that?
So steel erection and fabrication, obviously, you know, with structures, it's
yep.
a lot bigger steel than sheet metal, but you know, cutting stuff out, making mm-hmm. stuff to a template is still the same process.
Sure.
So I took a job as a welder at a local fab shop there in Nashville. And then all of a sudden I was on the road with them running jobs and putting buildings up all across America. Didn't even wow. realize it was happening. Bam, here it was. So now, you know, 13 years after that, I'm a safety manager for a very large GC. I think we do about $5 billion a year in business.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm working right now in Ohio. So I have two rigs, actually. I have two sim rigs, and they're pretty close, not identical, but they're very mm-hmm. similar. Two quad monitor rigs, 32-inch curved monitors on the main, and a 32-inch flat monitor for the quad.
Oh, cool.
So I've got two of those rigs, one in Ohio and one in Florida. I spend 10 days in Ohio working, and then I get 4 days off here in Florida.
Oh, no
kidding. I'm back and forth, and, you know, it's fun to race.
You said you've been doing iRacing for about 3 years. So are you one of the us iRacing veterans? Yeah, me with my A license, but 1,000 iRating, and been doing it for 6 years. So are you what we call a COVID baby?
I would be lumped in with that, yes. But
okay,
I did some sim racing back in 2008 on a platform called R Factor with a VHR mod.
Oh, okay.
I did that for a couple of years. It was funny because I was racing out of a hotel. I was living on the road, obviously, with, you know, being in construction.
Sure.
But you'd be amazed at how good hotel Wi-Fi is, by the way.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I was racing off of a laptop with an HDMI cable hooked to the TV in the room.
I mounted
my G27 to the ironing board because you could adjust the height.
Yep.
And use the desk chair there, and that was my starting sim rig right there.
Oh, that's not too much different than what we started with. My son Sam, who by the way is Sam Dreis Media, he just started a. Let me just give you a little background on him. We started going to dirt tracks when he was like 8 or 9 years old. Got hooked on racing, and right now he is social media manager for NEMR, which is New England Motorcycle Road Racing. He's a photographer for Sports Car Club of America. He was shooting last year for Podium Motorsports, and he did a bunch of IMSA races and NASCAR. And tomorrow night, he is flying down to Texas Motor Speedway. He got hired to shoot the truck race this weekend.
And, oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, and the kid's 22 years old, and I'm like, just remember where you got into photography, because that's what I do on the side. And then he just started his podcast, Sam Dreis Media, which you can find on YouTube, and it's dedicated to anybody that's in the media end of racing, from motorcycles to NASCAR to dirt tracks. And he's had... Let me see who's had on there. Photographer from Haas Motorsports or Stuart Haas and a bunch of other guys. I'm like, dude, you're making me look bad here. You know, I said, I'm the guy that did talk radio, remember? And you would come down and when I would tell you to push the button to print the news and you'd hand it to me and I'd read it and I'd say, thank you, Sam. I said, don't forget your roots, dude. So kudos out to him. So you said you're in Florida tonight?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me, and you started by strapping your rig or your wheel to an ironing board.
Yes. That's so I'm not the tallest individual.
Neither am I,
but I'm not like, you know, crazy short, but
yep.
The desk chairs and the desk just weren't at the right height. Like when I mounted it instead of the desk chair, I could adjust the chair, but it never felt right.
Gotcha.
I always wanted the wheel to be at a certain height. And I got to thinking one night and I was like, wait a minute. What if I just use the ironing board? Because you can raise and lower that thing. And I could just dial it in perfect. And I drug the ironing board out and I had to go cut two pieces of 2x4s because that little lip on the ironing board wouldn't let the clamps clamp down.
Oh, man.
So I got, you know, a couple pieces of 2x4 put underneath that clamp and it was golden.
So what did it look like when you walked into a hotel room carrying a 2x4? Or did you manage to hide it in your luggage somehow?
Well, no, there were just a couple small pieces.
A couple
inches long. Just enough to get, because that lip on that ironing board wouldn't let that wheel, like if I pulled back on it, it would tilt down because of that lip on that ironing board. So I just needed something to fill the gap there. But funniest thing is when I upgraded, when I got done playing VHR, I got rid of everything. And then I didn't start again. Well, it's a continuation of that story just a second ago. I didn't start again until right before COVID. I was in Vegas for a construction conference.
Yep.
And just so happens that NASCAR was in town the weekend that the conference ended. So I called my buddy Pee Wee up, which he's still a NASCAR official. I was like, hey, man, I'm going to be in Vegas. I'm going to come to the track, blah, blah, blah. He's like, all right, cool. I'll put you on the list. So I went there, and then all of a sudden, I met some friends of mine that I used to play R Factor with that work on crews still. And they're like, hey, man, you want to get into iRacing? Blah, blah, blah. I was like, man, I don't know. You guys were talking about it when we got done playing R-Factor. Is it worth it? And they're like, oh, yeah, come on. So
oh, it's awesome.
I started there after Vegas, right before COVID started. But like I said, I would be lumped into the whole COVID thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not I wouldn't consider it. But it's all good if it is.
No, I hear you. I've just had, I would say, probably 80% of my guests on the show, except for guys like Justin Clapper, you know, his last year as a tire changer for Zane Smith.
Right.
Everybody's all like, well, I call them COVID babies, just, you know, just to be funny. But it was funny when you said you strapped it to the ironing board. Sam was the first one to get into iRacing. And of course he wasn't old enough, so he had to use my credit card, and he had the $50 rig complete with the pedals and wheel, and he strapped it to the dining room table and racing off a laptop. And I started, oh, this looks pretty cool. And then all of a sudden I get this email from iRacing that my account is suspended.
Uh-oh.
And I'm like, Sam, what did you do? Oh, I called somebody a scumbag when because I lost the race on the last turn. I go, well, you're not racing for 30 days. So then I said, tell me about this iRacing thing. So he started talking to me about it. I was like, all right, well, tell you what, we're gonna move it downstairs, because my man cave downstairs was originally my home brewery, and then it was my hydroponics room. I said, we'll build something. So I had the table where I used to bottle my beer when I was brewing, and I bought a rig, an open wheeler rig, which I still have, and you know, the G29 or G27. Wheel and the pedals, and we were racing on a laptop sitting on the floor. And I'm like, oh gosh, I had spinal fusion like 20 years ago. I can't be sitting down. And I am getting older. I said, wearing glasses, racing on a 21-inch laptop. So we built the platform, and then we graduated to a 21-inch monitor. And right now, it's a pretty nice rig. I still like the G29 or 920 wheel, but I just upgraded to the Club 3 V-Sport pedals, and it's been great. And I got a 42-inch monitor and all the bells and whistles around it. And on the left-hand side, I've got the front quarter panel and the rear left quarter panel from Greg Biffle's Cheez-It car.
Oh, nice.
And then all the other...
Now, when I got into iRacing there after Vegas, I started again with a laptop, but mm-hmm. I quickly bought one of the GTR rig.
Okay.
It was very affordable. It looked like it was pretty durable.
Yep.
I bought it and with a 32-inch curved monitor. And that was yep. that was my basic starting rig. And then as I started, I was like, man, this thing, I wish the screen was closer. So then, yep. you know, being a fabricator and a welder, I was like, well, if I cut here and cut here and blah, yeah. blah, blah. So I wound up lowering the monitor stand and bringing it closer to the wheel. And with the material that I cut out, I actually welded a shelf onto the back.
Oh, no kidding.
So now, like, this rig in Florida used to be my traveling rig. It's got casters on the bottom of it.
No shit.
I could load it in the back of my truck and lay it over. And then I would literally roll the rig, the seat, and the wheel stand.
Oh,
but
man.
With a, you know, all the equipment was in a tote.
Yep.
And I would put that on the seat, and I would literally roll the whole rig into the lobby of the hotel with, you know, with my tote and the monitor and stuff in the box. And these people would look at me like, what the hell is this guy bringing into our hotel?
Yeah, you just tell them, I'm shooting pornos, so leave me alone.
What's that?
I'm shooting pornos, leave me alone.
Yeah. So then, you know, I progressed to it, and I added two more monitors. So now I got a triple monitor rig in a hotel.
Yep.
And then, you know, maids, I don't ever get room service. They're like, well, don't you want us to service your room? Like, no, I don't want you to go in my room.
Stay out of it. Yeah.
But, yeah, so I raced out of a hotel for a long time on triple monitors with an entire traveling rig.
And did you use a laptop, or did you bring a PC with you?
I started out with a laptop, but then I bought a PC from FEG.
Okay.
And ran that for a while, and then upgraded to a little bit different PC, and I gave that one to my nephew. But still the Florida rig that I'm on right now, it still has the casters on and everything. This is the traveling rig
I
started out with. It's very unique. Like I said, I've chopped it, cut it.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in the hotel room actually one day, and it was during COVID. I was up in Michigan, and there wasn't much going on.
No, not in Michigan.
So I brought a plumb bob home from my from work, and I hung a plumb bob down off the bottom of the wheel stand and figured out what the difference was between, you know, the monitor and the back of the wheel.
Yep.
And did some calculating, figured out how much I wanted to lower it, and measured off the plumb bob and blah, 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 and got about 12 inches off the length and 4 inches off the height. And this thing sits absolutely perfect to where I'm at right now.
Have you tried VR, and do you look to go to VR at some point?
I did. I liked it. I liked it a whole lot, but it gave me a headache after about an hour.
Gotcha.
And I've got an 8 and a 4 year old.
Yep.
So if they ever come down and needed attention with a VR headset, this thing will happen.
Exactly. Did you suffer any vertigo when you first started with that?
No vertigo, just a headache, man. Like after a little while, I got a weird nose bone apparently, and I couldn't get the thing to seal around my face correctly. And there was always like a pinhole of light no matter what I did. And it messed with me a little bit. It just gave me a headache. I didn't really get vertigo, but it just wasn't my thing.
So what do you do when you got the VR goggles on and you can't see your relative screen or anything like that? Or, you know, I don't know if you've got a little button box. It's basically just a $15 keyboard, and I've got commands typed in on that. How do you get around that when you're on VR?
Well, like I said, I didn't use it that long.
Gotcha.
So I didn't truly experience all of VR, because I quickly found out after about a day and a half, 2 days, that it just wasn't going to work out for me. Because like I said, with the kids, if they needed anything, and then it kind of gave me a headache, but I didn't really mess with it. So I can't honestly answer that.
Okay. That's fair. So tell me, Rick Ware Racing, what did you do for them?
Rick, that was a lot of fun. We had drivers like Stan Boyd, Larry Gunselman, Kim Crosby, and the Boudreaux's Buttface car. I was a mechanic, crew chief for them for a few races for Stan and Kim. Just tire changer, tire carrier, whatever we needed done. We only had probably 10 people on staff. So, you know, when we were at the track, we were thrashing, and then we weren't at the track. We were at the shop thrashing to get cars ready. I recall one year at Daytona. I can't remember the year, but we got back from I can't remember where we raced before Daytona, but we got back on a Monday, and we were supposed to check in at Daytona on Thursday. So we didn't get our car back from the paint shop until Tuesday afternoon.
Oh man.
And we had to run the setup on it, get the motor put in it, windows, crush panels. We got it all ready. I think the garage opened in Daytona at 2 o'clock on Thursday.
Yep.
Nope. I'm sorry. 11 o'clock Thursday morning.
Wow.
We didn't load the truck in Thomasville, North Carolina until Wednesday night at, I don't know, maybe 10 o'clock. So I got in my car and drove to Concord and picked up some clothes and a little help and made my way to Daytona, drove all night. We got to the garage about an hour before it opened and went through tech. It was about a 12-hour tech day.
Oh, my
gosh. And finally got to sleep. So I went to bed, woke up Tuesday morning. We received the car, and I didn't go to bed again until Thursday night after tech at about, 2 o'clock in the morning, Friday morning.
Wow. How does that compare with having 10 guys on the team versus say Hendricks or Joe Gibbs?
Well, there wouldn't have been any of that thrashing. That car would have been ready to go in the trailer when we got back Monday morning.
Gotcha.
Well, they would have just been tinkering with it, but that's the beauty of those big teams, man. They have people to prepare everything, and if you're on the road, you're on the road. If you're in the shop, you're in the shop generally.
Yep.
Now they do have some race day crews and stuff that come out, but it makes a big difference working with a well-funded team and a well-employed team.
Right.
But I will say this, working on the small, low-funded teams, man, you get some experiences that you just don't get with those big teams.
Exactly.
You just have to do it all. You have to know it all, and you just have to make it work. You got to go. You don't really have time to sit back and think about it. You just got to make it happen.
And I'm sure that sponsorship is very important for the big teams, but even more for the little guys, correct?
Yes. That is the lifeblood. That's where you got a lot of the starting parks back in the day.
Right.
A team could bring three cars, qualify all three, but truly only race one, but collect, 43rd, 42nd place money, and that could get them to the next three or four races. You do that three or four times, and you're multiplying out 18 to 20 races. Now you almost got a full schedule going, and you're just starting parking and not being any hard on equipment. So, I mean, it was a necessary evil back in that time, the starting parks.
Yep.
They were the lifeblood of filling the fields, because I know when NASCAR went from 43 to 40 cars, it was mainly due to the TV contract, because the contracts specifically said there was going to be 43 cars starting the race. And, when the economy kind of started getting tough, there's not as many cars were showing up.
Yep.
We were having 40 cars, 39 cars, and the TV contract was taking a hit on that. So, as the starting parks were going on and filling the field, man, they were a very necessary evil back in its time, until NASCAR figured, well, we just, not do that anymore and lower the starting grid and not have to worry about that.
Yep. So I understand having a minimum number of cars, because I'm sure Fox wouldn't, NBC would not want to show a race with eight cars. Why would they balk going from 43 to, say, 39 cars?
Why would they balk? What do you mean?
Well, you said the networks required a minimum for the contract. You guaranteed them a certain number of cars. And what would happen if you didn't meet that guarantee? How would they respond to that?
It was a liquidated damages kind of thing in the contracts. I wasn't a NASCAR contract expert or anything, but I did hear grumbles from, the executives and stuff and whatnot. But most of the time it was a liquidated damages deal per the contract of, you owe us X amount of money for X amount of car that's not on that grid.
Got it. Yeah, like you say, I wouldn't want to be spending $3 billion sponsoring somebody that's going to show up with like 8 or 10 cars.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, which is happening in the Trans Am series. I work over at Lime Rock Park, which is about 45 minutes from my home. I say work. We're a volunteer organization called the Right Handers, but we are like the, we show up and we handle like customer service and making sure, the fans showing up. We run transportation with the golf carts and stuff like that. But we also run the media center, the information booth. And when a driver shows up and he's late getting there, we make sure he gets to his paddock tent or his pit stall at the right time, make sure they get to the winner's circle. And last year, the Trans Am series, which is Memorial Day weekend, there's a premier series and a secondary series. Secondary series had like 28 cars. And the Premier Series, the elite drivers, they only had 10 cars on the track last year. And
That's terrible.
Yeah. And they were like, you're charging us $60 to come in and see this. And we're like, well, it's for the weekend. Yeah. But we came here to see the Premier race. So I kind of get you gotta back up something right there.
So when they went to the new TV negotiations, that's the writing was on the wall. Hey, there's not as many cars showing up. We're going to have to back this up. So that's what they did.
Right. And what was I going to say next? So you're at a small team like Rick Ware. Was that before or after Furniture? Probably before Furniture Row, correct?
Yeah, Furniture Row was my last stop in
Got
the NASCAR scene. I did, Aerofab.
Yep.
PFI, they were independent fab shops.
Okay.
And then I went to Rick Ware's and then Johnny Davis's, which is JD Motorsports.
Got it.
Randy McDonald. And I did one stint with a team out of Kentucky. I didn't put anything on there. It's called Race Kentucky Motorsports. This guy had all kinds of money.
Yep.
And we had really good equipment, and all we needed to do was make the race at Dover. It's funny enough, I'm sitting at Dover in the pit stall right now on the game. but we were, I think, 18th in practice. We were good.
Yeah.
And took the green flag in qualifying and got to turn two in the oil pump belt. Oh my gosh. So we obviously missed the show, and that was the end of that deal. And from there, that's when I went with the driver. The driver was Stan Boyd. He lives up in Michigan.
Yep.
So I drove up to Michigan with him because we had talked to Bob Kozlowski right after that down there at the track. And he's like, man, I need some truck built. And right after we didn't make the show, I said, hey, Bob, I'll be up there, you know, next week if you want to build those trucks. He said, yeah, come on. So I went up to Michigan, up to K Automotive, which, like I said, is Bob Kozlowski's truck team. Deborah Renshaw was driving at the time and built a few trucks for him. And one of them was, I think she finished 13th on the lead lap at Michigan. And they didn't have all the great funding, but that was a pretty good piece. That was that's a high aero track for the trucks. And I felt pretty good about that bullet.
Cool. So as you're going from like a small team up to larger teams, at what point does it become important to, I mean, I know drivers have agents, but as you're working your way up as, let's say, a crew chief or an over-the-wall guy, at what point do you say, hey, I got to get myself either, I don't know, a contract attorney or an agent? Where does that come in?
That's a good question. And it wasn't like that in my day. Maybe the drivers had the agent. Yeah, obviously they do. But pit crew guys, man, we're just a dime a dozen, man. People go over the wall every day. There wasn't no contracts. You just had to. That sport is the most political machine I've been in outside of government, and I hadn't been in.
Oh, no kidding.
But that it is extremely political in that sport, and cutthroat as can be.
I understand the cutthroat part, but explain the political stuff if you don't mind.
It's all about who you know. And where they're at and what you're needing at the time. You know, it's hell, you could be on a team, being good with a driver, and next thing you know, a crew chief or a car chief comes in and you're out the door.
Got it.
It doesn't matter who you are, that if they want their people, they're getting their people.
Yeah. So how does that contradict NASCAR being and generally in racing in general being one big family?
I'm sorry, what was that?
I said, how does that compare to the general consensus or belief that racing is just like one big family?
Well, because it is. That's a weird thing to say. I know that's oxymoronic.
Right, but well, there's in-laws and outlaws, right?
Yeah, exactly right. That's exactly right. Like everybody knows everybody.
Right.
You know, would bend over backwards to help the crew, you know, in the next garage stall over. You need something. Let's work on each other's shit and get it out there. Like that's the point of it. But, you know, personal relationships, you got to safeguard those in that business. You can't throw them too far.
Right. So you don't burn any bridges because it's a pretty small community compared to.
Yes, it is.
You know, compared to, there might be 36 teams, but they're not like NFL teams with 70 and 80 guys on every team. Some have a couple hundred, some have, like you said, 10.
Right. Yep.
Got it. So tell me about your iRacing career and your TikTok account.
Oh, yes. So, like I said, I've been on it for about 3 years, iRacing for about 3 years. I really rushed through the old portion of it. It was, like I said, with my background, I just felt like I knew racing, and I do. But there's a lot of good lessons to be learned in the rookie class and D class and just a lot of good racecraft lessons, a lot of good, you know, what do you do in race situations that happen a lot more often in rookie and D class than they do in B and A class or C, B and A class.
Sure.
So when I started doing dirt stuff back last New Year's, I told myself, I said, I'm not going to rush through it. I'm just going to let it run out where it runs out, where my safety rating is where it is, where I rating is where it is. Currently, I think I'm a B class in dirt with a 1600 I rating, and I don't really pay much attention to it, but I'm just running it as it is. And I'm learning a lot more, a lot faster than I did with oval and some of the stuff I missed out on the lower classes.
Got it. What's your favorite iRacing series that you currently run?
Trucks.
I love trucks.
They're fun. They are. You can really move those things around and you don't have to finesse it as much as you do with a cup car.
Exactly. Have you tried the 87s?
Oh yeah. Those are fun.
Oh, they're awesome.
The GM4s are fun too.
That's what I hear. I run a it just seems that a lot of the more active leagues are the next gen cars, and to me they're too easy to drive. I got in an Arca series before they turned into Gen 4, and all I could describe it was like 16-year-old takes out his grandfather's Pontiac Bonneville after the day after he gets his license and takes it on the interstate and is like pooping his pants while he's trying to drive, because those things are, they're amazing. And I did the 87s. Facebook has a group, over 50 iRacing group or something like that. And a guy put it, we're going to do the 87s at Watkins Glen. And I'm like, oh yeah, it was so much fun.
And I bet it was.
Yeah, I'm about 3.5 hours from Watkins Glen, and we go up there. We've been going up there for like the last 9 years. We've been camping for the last 6.
It's one of my favorite tracks, man. Yeah. I love that area up there. Absolutely love it.
It's great. And our campsite is right near the Jackie Stewart grandstands, but stupid us, we got tickets for the first 5 or 6 years all the way over in Turn 1, which is about a mile walk from the campsite. And
yeah,
so,
that's a ways.
Yeah. So I said to myself,
sober by the time you get there.
Yeah, and then, you know, to stand up and you're up in row 38, it takes an hour and a half to get down to get a beer and back, and by that time, the race is over. So I said to my son this year, I said, you got your press credentials. Chances are you're going to be out there taking pictures. I'm moving our seats over to Jackie Stewart grandstand, which has a gigantic jumbotron, and it's only about 150 yards from our campsite. And he's like, yeah, that's fine. And I'm like, why didn't you say this last year? Because I said, dude,
butts are candy and nuts, right?
Yeah. I said, dude, you're 21. I'm 61. I don't want to be walking a mile and a half to the race and then walking a mile and a half back. So when I can sit right there at Jackie Stewart and have a couple beers, and if I run out of beers, I don't have to spend $7 for a beer. I'll just walk to the campsite and grab another one. And then after the race is over, pack everything up, which we do in the morning, and sit there and wait till everybody goes, and then we'll go home.
That works out.
It works out great. So, NASCAR, what's your favorite track? Favorite series? Who's your favorite driver?
There's a few favorite tracks I have. Dover's one of them.
Yep.
Nashville Fairgrounds is one of them. Obviously, being from Nashville, I'm kind of partial to that. But I'd say the Glen is probably my favorite, is my favorite road course.
Yep.
But I don't know, Nashville and Dover are probably my two favorites. That I would have to settle on those. I love those tracks.
Okay. Why so excited about Dover? I've been there. I've walked on the track, and I'm still trying to figure out why the straightaways are so banked.
Have you ever walked over the bridge when they're coming out of two?
No, I've not had that opportunity to do that yet.
Do yourself a favor and do that sometime, and you'll understand why.
Okay, I thought it had something.
If you're standing down on the infield,
yeah.
Man, when they haul off into one or three, man, it's like they just drop off a 3-story building.
It's amazing.
Bam, bottom out. And back on the throttle, it's just digging hard. Just all of, there's no room for mistakes. If you get a little bit sideways on the front stretch or the back stretch, you're probably on the inside fence.
Wow.
It's just such a technical track, but you can be so abusive with it at the same time. I love it. I absolutely love Dover. It is a blast to watch to race at.
Yep.
A 1 mile track that they average 160 something mile an hour.
That's
around.
True. Yep.
You know, by the way, they're going two different directions. You know what I'm saying? They're going one way, and then they got to get turned around and go back the other way, and they're averaging 160 mile an hour. That's badass.
Yeah, it is. What's your idea of why the straightaways are even banked so high?
I don't know. I guess this is the way it was laid out. You know, there's a harness track on the inside, a harness racing track on the inside.
Yep.
But I don't know. I guess this is the way they designed the track to begin with.
Okay.
Like it was the Monster Mile. It is a monster.
And what a great marketing tool putting Miles the Monster out front.
Oh yeah,
that was brilliant.
Somebody
said there's going to be something called Instagram coming up in 30 years. We better be ready for that.
Yep.
Yeah, and then what was funny is I do some photography on the side, a little bit of professional photography, And last time I was at Dover, I was taking pictures of people taking pictures of Miles. And I was the only one
that
had a digital DSLR semi-pro camera. Everybody else was on their phones. And I'm like, wow, I'm getting real old.
That's crazy.
Yep. But it was so cool. Some of the images and, you know, Sam, when he likes to take pictures of the crashes, the cars coming around the turns and stuff like that. And when I had Justin Clapper and his partner on, who did the 24 Beers of Daytona on iRacing, and I was asking him, I said, okay, you're the driver, you're with the pit crew. What kind of pictures do you guys like? He says, man, he goes, we're so away from our family so much. If a photographer comes along and gets me with my kid and my wife while we're setting up in the pits before the race, that's golden. So I kind of do the what's called the street photography. I love taking pictures of the cars on the track, but my favorite thing to do is catch the, you know, the vibe or the feeling of the event. And any track is a car going around fast, but if you can catch a guy, you know, some dude, he's like 45 and he's like big macho jock, and he's got his beer in one hand and hot dog in the other, and he puts a hot dog to his mouth and he gets the mustard on his face or his nose. That's the picture I want to take.
Right.
Because that really tells a story.
Yes, it does.
So you're going to jump into the barbecue thing here in a minute, because I know we've got a common denominator there, which
couple of them.
Yeah. It's amazing. There's so many people that I've had on that are like, you know, we're photographers, we're barbecue guys. And, oh, I brew beer. And what's your favorite? It's just like, it's a big family. And the closest I ever got to being on a track was a couple of years ago. We already had tickets for IMSA up at Watkins Glen, and it's 100. Oh, as the crow flies, it's probably 130 miles, but you can only drive it by going 190 or 200 miles. So we went up and back the same day, and WeatherTech had a contest on Facebook, and I'm like, yeah, I'll enter the contest. So we won the contest. We got to hang out in the WeatherTech tent right around the final turn coming into the home stretch, and I got to go around the whole entire track, including the boot in the new Toyota Supra. And
awesome.
We got in there, we go down turn one, 121 miles an hour. The guy goes, okay, here we go. We're going up the guy narrated it the whole time, and he was great. And we're going down, and he goes, here we go down the back stretch. We're doing 141 miles an hour. And here comes the chicane. Whoa, we're doing 80. The G force going from 100, even in the Toyota Supra. Now, this was not the Xfinity car. This was like a souped up street version. So there was no roll cage, no helmets. And this guy was so good, and it was 2 minutes. I was laughing my head off, but I was lucky enough to keep my phone up near the window and got the video. And then a couple weeks later, when IMSA came down to Lime Rock, and I've got my Lime Rock badge on and my shirt and my hat, and I'm looking really cool driving my golf cart around. I pull up to him and I said, are you taking care of my Supra there? And he goes, what do you mean? He looks up and he goes, oh, it's you. And I said, that was the wildest thing. It was so much fun. So that's the closest I've gotten to doing racing, other than driving my pickup truck 50 miles an hour around Lime Rock Park. So
when I worked for Rick, that was nice working on that small team, because there was several occasions where we would go test before we would go to a race, like specifically one at Auto City Speedway up there in Michigan, where our driver Stan was from. We were going to race IRP, and we had just got a new car, and it gotten a car fixed. So we took it up there to Auto City in Michigan and tested it, because it's a short, flat track.
Yeah.
Not exactly like IRP, but reasonably close. Mm-hmm. So after the test, they let us get in there and test with it too. And that was a lot of fun, driving a Busch car, an actual Busch car. And you don't get many opportunities to do it. So when you do, you got to seize.
You got to grab it.
So I got in there, and in two laps, they were telling me, "Now you're going to pull the car off before something happens." I was only like 0.3 off of Stan's time.
Oh, no kidding!
And like you are stupid, and I said, "Well, I built it. I can fix it." So If I wreck it, Sean will fix it. But yeah, so that was great. Fun getting to test some actual real live Busch cars with the fresh bullets in them. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, if you're just tuning in or you're watching post live on YouTube or listening on any of the podcasts, this is the Sim Racing Podcast, also known as kind of formally the Joe Sixpack Racing Podcast. I'm Greg Dreiss, your host. Our guest tonight is David Duke. He's done NASCAR officiating, Furniture Row Racing, JD Motorsports, Randy McDonald Racing, Wick Rare Racing, all kinds of stuff. K Automotive with Bob Keselowski, Aerofab, and he's built cars for Elliott Sander, Todd Bodine, and Larry Foyt, built trucks for Stedman, Marlin, Deborah Renshaw, Parker, and David Starr. He's my guest tonight. And the Sim Racing Podcast, you can watch it on YouTube forever. You can watch it on Twitch for 2 weeks. It's the nice thing about Twitch, it's free, but they don't keep it long. They kick it out, as well as you can watch it and listen on Spotify, Anchor.fm. Oh, let me see who else. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pandora, everything out there. And it's everything about racing. Usually call the series The Faces Behind the Races. So my guest is David Duke. And one of the things about tonight's podcast is we're also simulcasting on David Duke's TikTok channel. So
yes.
Tell me a little bit more about that. We started talking, and then we got back into barbecue or racing. So tell me about Big Duke Sim Racing. What's that all about?
Well, I guess, you know, the old joke when I first started iRacing was, you know, what the iRacing starter kit was, you know, a rig and a Twitch account, and
yep,
that you're going to be a streamer and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the percentage of people actually follow through and do that. So, yeah, I bought a rig and I got a Twitch account. And I just never had Big Duke Sim Racing as a name up until like last December. I don't even know where the hell they got that from.
I was going to say, where'd you come up with that name?
I was just streaming and I had a TikTok account that was just a generic TikTok account just because I like watching it. It's funny. And I randomly stitched a video that was a brisket video, actually. This guy, I think he microwaved brisket. It was awful. And I just stitched it and I was like, you know, what the, did you boil it? Or I don't even know what I said, but I was like, what is that gray meat bullshit? And that was the end of it. And that thing got 2.8 million views.
Oh, that's incredible.
And then there was a couple of questions that I answered with follow-up TikToks that those each got over 100,000 views. So I pushed my followers up to over 1,000 and gave me the ability to go live. And
there you go.
I met a gentleman in St. Augustine. He's actually the owner of a company, one of my sponsors, Killer Body, the cooling head inserts. I met him in St. Augustine, and he's like, he was an IT guy, and I was asking him some questions. He's like, man, you need to keep it specific. You need to do one thing. You need to push out some content, blah, blah, blah. Yep. If you're going to be a streamer, that's what you got to do. I was like, all right, cool. So I hid all of my content and just went straight to sim racing content.
There you go.
And came up with a name of somebody called me Big Duke one day at work, and it popped in the back of my head. I don't know. Back in December, I was like, Big Duke Sim Racing. Well, that sounds reasonable.
Sure.
So I picked that name and it kind of branded myself. And since, like I said, since I was able to go live with 1,000 viewers, that was last July, I think it was. Maybe September, I think. Maybe it was September. But anyway, I'm now up to 8,902 followers on TikTok.
Oh, that's cool.
With over 186,000 viewers in the last 60 days.
Excellent.
Of my live stream. Over 152,000 likes across my content. So
yeah,
it just randomly blew up one day and I ran with it.
Cool. I've got a sim racing account on TikTok, but I'm a garden designer by trade. And I call myself a garden designer instead of landscaper, even because everybody up here, even though I'm in New York, just south of Albany, which sucks up, I think this year, $227 billion of our money. It's a pretty rural area. And anybody with a pickup truck and a lawnmower calls themselves a landscaper. But I've been a horticulturist my entire career, And my grandfather was President Roosevelt's gardener. So I went with garden designer instead of lawn care or landscaper. And
you got to set yourself apart.
Yep. And it's all about creating that identity. And I've just got into TikTok a little over a year ago on that side. And I'm up to about 1,800 followers, 56,000 likes, and haven't done the live thing yet. So you find the live thing really works better than just posting content?
I'm sorry, what now?
Okay.
I got interrupted. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Do you find live streaming on TikTok is better than posting content that people follow up on later on?
No, you know what? I really like both. I enjoy getting the notifications of the different content videos that I've posted and sure. people seeing them, reacting to them. And it's just as much as I enjoy going live and seeing the reactions and the, you know, the analytics of it afterwards. I love both of it.
Yeah.
I like both sides of the world.
I like looking at the data. Do you do anything special with hashtags? Or anybody tell you any tricks of the trade for that, or just keep it?
No, I hashtag a lot of the general stuff I do, just like sim racing, or, you know, hashtag sim racing, right. PC gaming, iRacing.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
Simulator, but, you know, just general hashtags like that. And I tag a few of the companies that I work with and stuff, but
okay.
I don't know. Now it seems like it's unusual for some of my content to get under a couple thousand views.
That's great. It's starting to take off on my garden page, but like I said, I haven't done much on the sim racing page. So you've been very encouraging on that end. It's just so many things you can do, because I've got a photography business. I've got my lawn care business. I do a couple different podcasts. I do this one. I do one on indoor gardening. I do another one on dive bars. And then another one I call the... I call it Curmudgeon Radio, which is, you know, it's kind of like the Archie Bunker type of stuff. You know, it's the retired white guy on the golf course with plaid pants and a striped shirt, you know, bull crapping, saying, get off my lawn, that type of stuff. So there's a lot going on there. So barbecue, Kansas City Barbecue Society, what's your affiliation with them?
I have a barbecue team with KCBS. I haven't done any competitions in a couple of years since I moved down here to Florida.
Yeah.
But, and I don't even know how I got involved in the KCBS, other than I know back in high school, I was always the guy that showed up to the party with the grill in the back of my truck.
There you go.
I never had to buy any beer or anything at the parties. People would bring food, and I would just cook for them all night. And
there you go.
They would bring me beer. So
that
was...
It's a good trade.
Kind of the starting of my barbecue career.
Well, you know, Nashville is kind of pretty close to the, you know, barbecue epicenter down there. So sauces, Kansas City style or Carolina vinegar or Carolina mustard?
I'm a Kansas City Memphis mix. I like the sweet Kansas and the tangy Memphis.
There you go.
I mix that. I use a good base. I use Jack Daniel's honey for my base and my sauce.
Cool.
I cook it out, but that's the base of my sauce.
Yep. And what about a rub?
Meat Church Barbecue.
Cool. Okay. And what's your favorite?
There's a guy in Waxahachie, Texas named Matt Pittman. He owns Meat Church Barbecue. It's called Honey Hog Rub, and I found it at Kansas City Barbecue Store one day. I was building an Amazon building out there by the Speedway in Kansas, and went to the Kansas City Barbecue Store and saw this rub with this pig with honey on his butt and these bees chasing. I was like, man, that looks pretty cool. So I bought it, and holy cow, man, he makes some good stuff.
Oh, that's great. I like I said, your reaction when I you mentioned your KCBS, and I said that I taught barbecue classes, and it was more on, you know, the rubs and marinade, but the title of the class was Go Ahead, Rub It In. And it was barbecue sauces, marinades, and rubs. And it was at, when I was a lawn and garden buyer for a family owned farm market, garden center, power equipment, meat, fish, deli, kind of like if you took Whole Foods Trader Joe's and smashed them together and added a garden center. That's what we were. I ran the garden center division. It was like $20 million in sales. The company now has five stores or $300 million. And like I said, we'd sell probably $300,000 in Weber grills a year company wide. And the stores that had Big Green Egg, which were three of the four, was probably another $150,000. And I would teach the barbecue class and the bosses, they hated it. And I'm like, what do you mean? Well, it's not gardening. I said, did you see our numbers for Weber Grill? We're like the number one dealer in New York State. And
yeah, but you're not selling any petunias.
Well, I also did classes on petunias too. You know, I did everything. But when they would show up on a Saturday afternoon in February when no garden center's doing business and there's 50 people looking, you know, sitting down in my class watching me make barbecue sauce, and that was kind of a feather in my cap and stick my tongue out at the owner, and he kind of, you know, laughed at it later. So it's just barbecue is so much fun. My favorite thing to cook on my Big Green Egg is, you know, the slow cooked meatloaf. I absolutely love making meatloaf on the Big Green Egg.
Smoked meatloaf is good. I like pulled pork.
Yep.
I like cooking a pork butt and I love cooking a brisket.
Yeah, the brisket's a challenge. You know, that's one that's shoe leather if you don't cook it right.
I picked one up. The very first brisket I did was a 16 pounder.
That's huge.
Didn't have a clue what I was doing. and it was, and I shit you not, the easiest cook I've ever did.
No kidding.
I watched a little a YouTube video about it at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, I generally knew what I was doing, but I wanted some other advice and other tips and tricks, and I watched a couple of videos. I was like, all right, I'm gonna let it rip. And I cooked it for about 11-12 hours, and was probably the best brisket I'd ever done. And to this day, I've cooked hundreds of brisket, and that was probably the best one I ever did.
That's great. What kind of rig you cook on?
It's HBT stick burner. It's a 72-inch. Shoot, it's
huge.
Called HBT smokers. They're out of Gunnersville, Alabama, and they build some good stuff. And it's a collapsible roof on it and everything. It's badass.
No kidding. That picture that you sent me with the roof over the top there that looks like that's the one you cook on.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any reason why it looks like a choo-choo train and maybe going back to our younger days when we played with the Lionel on Christmas morning?
I don't know. I never asked the owner. I know the owner of HBT, and I never asked him why they settled on that specific design. But yeah, I think you might be onto something there.
There's a lot of them. They look like an old, steam engine or even an old freight, like that.
Yep, you're right. Old steam engine like.
some of those rigs are amazing. There's one I saw that it was so huge. It had like a patio on the back end of it, and
there's a lot. I cooked at with United Rentals down in Nashville at the Barbecue and Red Shoes, the Ronald McDonald House barbecue competition down there in Nashville. And man, some guys brought some rigs in that were. I think one guy asked him how much his rig was, and it was right at about $175,000.
After he
got done explaining to him what all he had, and I was like, my gosh, man, what? Why? But then I got to looking at it, and I was like, I can see why.
You can see how it's nice. Instead of why not? Yeah. So, are you a purist, or do you use like a timer and like a smoke blower and stuff like that, or you know, to blow the air around to heat it up and cool it down, or you just totally all natural?
I absolutely use a blower. Okay. I use a fireboard system. It's a six channel. I've got three boards, so I got 18 channels.
Oh my gosh!
But I only use one of them as the blower. You know, the I think it's fireboard drive function. But yeah, absolutely, man. Like that's you know as well as I do. If you're gonna do competition barbecue, it's gotta be consistent.
It's got to be consistent. Yep. And
if I got a, you know, that smoker in particular is a big ass smoker. Don't get me
wrong.
Oh,
it's huge.
But I could keep that thing to within a half a degree, you know, plus or minus for hours on end, as long as I kept fuel in it. That fan works so good, man. Yep. It would just, like I said, I could keep it at a half a degree for hours on end.
That's cool because, like, so I've got the big green egg and you've got the, the damper at the top and the damper on the bottom, whatever you call it.
Yep.
And it's an art to get that thing open and close enough. So to the point where I've got little markings. If I'm doing ribs,
yep.
I got a little scratch here with an R and I got another one for this and that. So it's definitely an art form. What do you think of the pellet grills that are out there that you can run on your iPhone?
I got one at home. I got a Yoder at home. Or I used to have a Yoder. I got a Pit Boss now.
A Pit Boss. Okay.
So here's the deal. I live in Florida and
yep.
The rig is not down here. I have a little lanai where my pool is. It's not like I can have a stick burning rig.
Got it.
That's going to puff like a choo-choo train and make this little lanai black as hell. So I settled on the pellet smoker. It's easy.
Yep.
It tastes, you can't, if you know what you're doing, if you put out a good product, maybe you taste a little bit of difference in the smoke, but you're not going to taste a difference in the meat if you know what you're doing.
That's true. And it's still wood pellets.
Yeah, it's still wood pellets. I agree. Yeah. But, man, it sure is easy. It's nice to sleep during a cook. I've cooked so much
sure.
to the point where it's like, man, I really just want to sleep and let this thing cook itself.
I remember summers down in South Carolina where my mom grew up just outside of Augusta, Georgia, a small town called Jackson, South Carolina. It's like halfway between Augusta and Aiken. And Grandpa, my mother had 11 brothers and sisters, and my father up here in New York had 14. So I've got first cousins I've barely met. So we'd go down every summer, and I remember when I was like 10 years old, we'd go up to the farm, and Grandpa would pick out the pig. He goes, that one. And then next thing you know, we go pick it up the next day, and there's a dead pig in the back of his truck. And
Wilbur's on your plate.
Wilbur's on the plate. And it was an all-night affair because you just did it with wood. It wasn't charcoal. It wasn't hardwood. It was wood, like firewood. And yep. over this big spit and stuff like that he would build with cinder blocks and, oh, gosh, like almost like looked like a chain link fence. And then you'd take the two bars and twist it and turn it overnight. And I remember sometimes, you know, like 12 years old, staying up for 24 hours. When's the food ready? And then when it's ready, I'm like so tired.
A lot in Memphis, had some relatives in Memphis or down towards Memphis that would do a whole hog in the ground every year, 4th of July, man.
It was cool.
Incredible.
So much fun. Oh, back to Nashville. I was in Nashville once at a trade show and we stayed at, it got wiped out, I think, in one of the hurricanes or floods down there. But basically, the hotel was a botanical garden, and it was two octagons connected by this huge greenhouse with an unbelievable tropical garden in the middle. So anyway, what we do on the trade shows, and this goes way back before GPS, we'd get a map, and we'd take, and as soon as the trade show was done, we'd get in the car, pick an exit on the interstate, and basically just get lost, throw the map in the back seat.
Sounds like a good time.
Shortly, not too far outside of Nashville, we're driving around, we come across this catfish restaurant, and they had their own catfish ponds in the back, and the sign said catfish kitchen or something like that. It was a 14-foot long fiberglass catfish on the sign. Do you have any knowledge of that, or is it still there, or you ever hear of it?
Were you in Paris, Tennessee, you said?
It was just outside of Nashville, probably 20 miles outside. I forget the name of the hotel. It was near Dollywood.
No, Dollywood's out in East Tennessee. It's way out. It's Dollywood's 5.5 hours from Nashville.
All right. Well, this was a lot closer. I forget if I just knew the name of the hotel.
I think you were probably in Paris, Tennessee, because that is the home of the world's largest fish fry.
That sounds like it was Paris, yes.
Was there an Eiffel Tower there? A mini one?
As a matter of fact, I think you bring up, I think there was.
That would be Paris, Tennessee. It is the home of the world's largest fish fry. It's a huge event every summer. It's a fish fry. People bring it's a fish fry. It's hundreds of thousands of people at a fish fry.
Oh, okay. Because this place, it may not have been that exact place you're talking about, but this place, they had a bunch of catfish ponds out back. And part of the shtick was, while you're eating your catfish that they're barbecuing for you, they go out and they throw the feed in the ponds, and it's like a shark frenzy.
Yeah.
So everything, and it was amazing. It was totally, totally amazing. That, and then we went a little bit into the countryside, and we come across this guy. It's got a $5 what do you have yard sale. Everything in his front yard was $5. And
nice.
And he had soda inside. So the guy I was with, he goes, I'm going to stay in the car. So I'm walking around at the yard sale. I walk inside, and he's got the, oh, kind of like today, this where they serve ice cream out of the freezers or the coolers that slide up like right in front of you. It's not a stand-up cooler. Yep. And I'm looking around, and there's all these, you know, there's root beer and there's this and that. And it's right inside the front door of his house. And I'm like, I'll take a Coke. And the guy looks at me and goes, 50? I gave him $1 and walked out and said, keep the change. Because I literally walked into this guy's house, and just inside his front door, he had it blocked off with all the soda coolers. And I'm like, all right, that I've seen this in Jackson, South Carolina. So it was really cool. Just some of the stuff you see when you're out on the road.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was great.
Kind that of, is awesome.
Kind of reminded me of that, because the biggest thing, Jackson, South Carolina is a town maybe of 1,500 people. And the biggest thing there, of course, is Augusta and the Savannah River plant, where they developed all the nuclear bombs or stuff like that during World War II. And such, and there was a couple of gas stations. One guy said, I can't compete with all the gas station stuff. So he got rid of his lifts and his bays and put in pool tables. And that was the biggest thing in town. You go up and you start shooting pool, and then you go out and get your 50 cent, you know, knee high or whatever the grape soda was at the time down there, and playing pool with my aunt, who's like 2 months older than me, and her boyfriend. And somebody like three tables over and says, typical Southern stuff. You go, do I hear a Yankee? And I'm like, uh-oh. And I'm like 16 years old, right? Or maybe 17. Dun, dun, dun. And my aunt and her boyfriend were like, he's with us. Okay, as long as he's not staying. That was...
Yeah, that's the difference between a Yankee and a damn Yankee, right?
Yeah, the damn Yankees stay. So, oh gosh, I absolutely love the South down there. And if I just can convince my wife that, yeah, the heat and humidity is worth it for the cheaper cost of living down there. And just the people, they're so great. I had so much fun down there.
I agree.
So, do you do any iRacing leagues?
Yeah, I participate in several leagues. Okay. Speed Racing Network. I was running with them, and went through some different employment stuff and got off sequence with them, and hadn't run with them in a while. But I got a friend of mine, Dave Fuge Jr., also a former NASCAR crew chief in the Cup truck and Busch Series and mechanic and everything else. Hey, me and him run a league. It's an open setup, 50% distance, 50%. 50% fuel league. I run in a Thursday night Xfinity league, which they're at Daytona Road Course tonight, and I wasn't even trying to run a road course, so this filled that in. And there's a...
Oops. No, keep going. Still there? Dave, you still with us there?
Yeah, you got me?
Yeah, go ahead.
What'd you miss?
You were saying you were going to run Xfinity at the Daytona Road Course, but this filled in, and I don't blame you because...
I'm in a Thursday Xfinity League.
Got it.
They're running tonight, and it was the Daytona Road Course, and that wasn't on my agenda for the night.
No,
I skipped out on that for the night to settle for the podcast, which is really what I wanted to do anyway. So that works out.
Trying to drive Xfinity on the Daytona Road Course is worse than a weekend in Cleveland.
I'm sure it probably is. Also run a Monday night league. Going to get into a Wednesday night league here pretty soon. So I got a pretty full schedule on iRacing.
Cool. So for anybody that's listening out there who's going to pick this up and they want to catch you on TikTok, tell me your TikTok name, your TikTok channel, and how can people find you?
Twitch and TikTok are the exact same name. BigDuke_Sim_Racing. Generally, I'm live nightly. That's the thing about my channel is with my work schedule, working 10 nights in Ohio and then spending 4 nights here at home in Florida. These 4 nights that I'm here in Florida, I only stream maybe once or twice because I spend time with my wife and kids.
Of course.
But in Ohio, when I get to Ohio Monday, I'll start another 10-day stint of 5 to 6 hours every single night, just streaming my ass off. I think the I don't know if I shared those analytics with you earlier, but over the last 60 days, I think I've got 161 something hours of streaming.
Oh my gosh!
But like I said, I work 10 to 12 hours a day.
Sure.
At work, and then when I'm off work in Ohio, I go back to a room, right? I don't have my kids. I don't have my wife there.
Yep.
I get my kids to bed. I'll video chat with them. And then I'm streaming. I got nothing else to do. And that's what I do. So being a construction worker, especially one that travels, man, you're really limited on the amount of additional income that you're able to generate. It's not like you can go get a second job. You never know how many hours you're going to work at your primary job. So it's not like you can go deliver pizzas. You can't commit to another schedule because you might work 14 hours one day and only 6 hours the next.
Exactly.
So after this, after my TikTok took off and I started, you know, I got to 1,000 followers and I started live streaming, and then people started, started sending me gifts. And I was like, well, you know, and then a penny here or there. Right. I'm like, well, if people are sending a penny here or there, maybe if I increase what I'm doing, maybe they'll start sending a nickel here or there, right? Or a dime here or there.
Sure.
And so I got subs on Twitch now, making a little bit of income from that. I'm a Twitch affiliate. I'm making just a tiny bit of income from iRacing, but I've gotten my analytics so tuned in that I'm able to present myself to a company and say, hey, over the next 365 days, if you look at my analytics from 60 days, I'm going to get your logo in front of over a million people.
Well, that's cool.
For the next, you know, 365 days. And oh, by the way, my analytics show that my followers watch an average of 10 minutes.
That's huge.
That just randomly joined watch an average of an hour, a minute and 40 seconds. So, you know, I can say, what is your advertising dollars worth to a million people that are definitely going to watch it for right at 2 minutes.
That is
what's your advertising dollars worth? So that's what I'm approaching people with.
That is huge, because what's the average view of a video online? It's like you've got 3 seconds to grab their attention or they're just going to, you know, scroll on by.
Right. So with my fourth monitor, I'm able to, you know, play ads and not audio ads, just visual ads where I can, you know, I got slideshow of all my marketing partners, right? And it goes, I think it lasts about 30 seconds and then it starts over. There's a good way to advertise on TikTok if you approach it correctly. It might sound strange to say, hey man, I'm a streamer, a NASCAR streamer. You want to sponsor me? Well, hell no, I don't. Well, what if I can get your product in the eyes of over a million people? Well, see, that's a little bit different. So, you know, like, especially in today's world, you got to be, you've got to be creative and deliberate about how you go about making some extra money. So
exactly
that's what I'm doing.
Yep. And you stream Totally Racing.
Yes. That's all I stream is iRacing. That's the only game I play. This is just iRacing. That is it.
Nope. I got it. I've got a little, at least that I'm in the horticulturist and stuff. And as soon as my daughter moved out, she got married last year, we got this extra room upstairs. And I'm like, oh, houseplants are popular. People are paying a lot of money for houseplants. So that room is now a shop on Etsy. And I'm selling anywhere between $300 and $500 a month of rooted cuttings and small plants. And I don't buy them wholesale. I'll go to all the garden centers and the box stores, and I'll see, let's, you know, pick a plant, say like a spider plant, I'll look at the babies. Okay, the plan is $10, and I'm looking at the babies. Each one of those babies is $5. So I'm like, ooh, $10 for this plant, 15 babies at $5 a piece. They're 75.
Bam.
And then I've got two spider plants, and I think I've paid $35 between the two spider plants. And since I started this last March, those two plants have generated probably $500 in sales.
That's phenomenal.
And then I do this on...
that is absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. So I think the other day I looked at my Twitch account. I think I had about right at about $50 in it. And I didn't even realize I was going to do that. So cool. It is weird, but yeah, it's cool.
So how does TikTok pay you if they do? Do you do that mostly to get people to advertise that pay you? Because I don't understand the marketing with TikTok where people are getting paid by TikTok. Or do they?
I'm not getting paid by TikTok.
Okay.
I get paid by people subscribing to my TikTok channel.
Got
or
it.
Leaving gifts or whatever it is during the lives. Like, if you're watching a live and a little rose pops up on the screen, that's somebody sending a gift. It might only
be a penny
or a half a cent here or there.
Yeah.
But that's how you generate off of TikTok. Now, once you get to 10,000 followers, you can join the creators fund, but that's still pennies. But then you are eligible to get paid directly from TikTok. Currently, I'm at like 8902, I think is what it was. So probably by June, I'll be over 10,000 where I could join that.
Okay.
But I think I'm doing probably better doing what I'm doing right now and just taking the tips.
Right.
I do have a link tree and stuff, and people can go to the link tree and see all of my equipment, all of the downloads, all of my marketing partners, and there's a way for them to leave a tip on my link tree. I've had several people leave a $20 tip here or there just because they've asked me questions, and I've gone and done my due diligence to answer their questions, or if I didn't know, find the right answer for them. So it's a community that I'm trying to build. You know, like my biggest issue when I started iRacing, I knew a lot of the questions that people were asking just from my motorsports background anyway.
Sure.
But, man, you get on these iRacing community pages, and people ask the simplest of questions just because they don't know.
Right.
Not everybody has time to sit down and read the sporting code, nor do they want to, nor do they really care to.
Yep.
And you know, people ask the questions, and then some people are just absolute assholes.
Assholes, I was going to say that. Yep.
No, just go out of the way to be an absolute jackwad. And I watched that go on, and I'm like, man, that's no way to treat people.
Exactly.
So I took the approach of, I'm welcoming anybody into my community. I've got a Discord invite on my link tree. If you're new and you want to come in and ask me questions personally because you don't want to get flamed on the Facebook pages, hey, come on. I'm that guy. I'm only 3 years removed from being a brand new guy on iRacing. I hadn't forgot what it's like to be new.
Right.
No, I'm not going to. So that's kind of my approach to my community.
I don't blame you. Facebook groups are, oh my gosh, they're, like you said, they're flamethrowers. It's a viper's pit. When Facebook first started promoting Facebook groups on TV, right around, I think just before COVID hit, they started that, or during COVID, or the very beginnings, all my professional gardeners and were like, oh, this is gonna be great, we can share all our information with everybody. Well, little did we know that there's this Antifa on Facebook garden groups that we call the Epsom salts mafia, and these people,
it's amazing.
They
just hate to hate.
Yeah, they bow down, and you probably saw it on my page where I took this pile of salt, a picture, and put Epsom salts up there with the moon in the background and a bunch of people like waving to the Epsom salts bag. Now, according to these gardening experts on the Facebook garden pages, Epsom salts is a fertilizer, an insecticide, a fungicide, and an herbicide all in one. And I'm like, all right, you're putting this on your tomato plants, you're putting it on this, and you're also saying it kills weeds. Why doesn't it kill your tomato plants? Oh, it only kills weeds.
That's a good question.
And then there's another one that we call the Humpty Dumpty Gang, who is all about, oh, eggshells. Eggshells, you know, the calcium for this, and the eggshells, they kill slugs. And I'm like, and so many of my professional garden friends, they just said, we can't take it anymore because, you know, you tell people, okay, my 40 years in the business, 4 years of school, kind of outranks your Google search. And they're like, no, it doesn't. And friends are like, they ran away. And it, I talked to other friends that are electricians, carpenters, cooks, bakers, candlestick makers, and they get on there to the Facebook groups. They want to share their information and they just get ridiculed. And a lot of the Facebook iRacing groups have turned into that. Like you said, some guy gets on there and he says, I'm brand new and I've got this controller and I've got an A rating and a 1400, A license and a 1400 I rating. Like, no, you don't. And I'm like, yeah, the guy probably does, because there's one guy that I raced with before I got into the leagues. He says, I race with a controller, and this guy was phenomenal with just like a joystick, and he was kicking everybody's butt. And I talked to some of them, is this guy really racing with a joystick? And he goes, yeah, he's that good. I'm like, okay, good for him. So yeah, just like you said, it's incredible. Well, it's, you have anything else you want to bring up, or just you want to wrap it up and tell a little bit more about yourself, how they get in touch with you?
Check out again, all my social is the same name at @BigDuke_Sim_Racing.
Cool.
You can find my link tree that way, TikTok, Twitch. My Facebook is Bearded Sim Racer. They wouldn't let me switch the name, and I don't understand why, but I do have a beard. But so my Facebook name is Bearded Sim Racer. All my contact information is on my link tree, and you can access that from Twitch, TikTok, Twitter, those three specific apps. You can access my link tree, but I'm gonna hold back some fun road stories maybe for another episode. In another few months or so. But maybe we can stick to just straight NASCAR content and get to the meat and potatoes of some of the stuff that I encountered.
Very good. Looking forward to it. And I do thank you so much for reaching out just a couple days ago and getting me all the bio stuff ahead of time. And I hope you enjoyed your visit tonight. And like I said, it's not an interview, it's a conversation.
Absolutely, man. This was phenomenal, man. More than I thought it would be. This is really cool.
Cool. And well, I like I said, I've got a pretty significant background in radio, a little bit of TV, some voiceovers, tons of public speaking. I'm kind of an introvert, but if you put a camera, a microphone in front of me, I'm not going to shut up, especially when I get in the pulpit at church every couple of years and they let me do a sermon. It's like fire and brimstone, and it's just a good time. So, David Duke, Big Duke Sim Racing, look him up on Facebook, look him up on Twitch and TikTok. And I want to thank you so much for simulcasting on TikTok there tonight. So maybe I'll get some bites off that, and then I'll send you a brisket or something like that.
Sounds good, Greg. Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for posting that, and thanks for getting back with me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Like I said, I think I sent you a Discord invite, man. If you want to poke in there,
I will maybe jump on that.
You know, get some more content or some other additional guests for your show. Yep. And feel free. I've got people joining every day. And
very good.
Like I said, I got a former crew chief in there, and
cool,
and some other things, man. I'd like to get you in there as well.
All right, we'll check back in a couple of weeks, a couple of months, see what's going on, and when you know if you got enough other stories and you just want to hit me up and say, hey, I want to come back on, definitely hit me up and we'll do it again.
Definitely, Greg. Thank you, man.
All right. Have a good night, sir.
Yep. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. Thank you, David Duke, Big Duke Sim Racing, our guest tonight. And we looked to talk an hour, and we're going almost an hour and a half. Great guy. Myriad of experience in the NASCAR scene and, of course, the barbecue scene. So we definitely hook up and find that quite a bit with all our friends out there in racing. We have something in common, and a guest that's going to come on, Elevated Esports, on, I think, the 14th of April. We're exchanging information back and forth, and he says, did you go to NASCAR at Watkins Glen last year? I said, yeah, why? He goes, well, I know you did, because we were hanging out at the bus stop, and then I checked them out, and I'm like, whoa, there you go. So racing's a big family. So once again, thank you, David Duke, for being a guest tonight. Join us Tuesday night for the 802 Cup Series podcast with yours truly, Greg Dreis, as we wrap up our season this Sunday at Phoenix, and also the BG Graphics 802 Late Model Series, which is starting up pretty soon. You want to join either one of these races, just look them up on Facebook or look them up on iRacing Leagues. you're doing some recruiting races. Cup Series is a fixed series. The late model series will be doing heats and then flipping the winners and stuff like that. And that's something I got to get used to because I just like getting out there and driving the road courses, the oval courses. So look us up there, the 802 Cup Series under 802 iRacing Leagues on Facebook, or look us up on iRacing. Send us a link that you want to join. We'll check you out. Just ask that you participate in a couple of the recruiting races so we can get to know you. You can get to know us. We don't care how fast you drive. We don't care. You got to be a decent driver, but we're all just out there to have some fun. For the Sim Racing Podcast, I'm Greg Dreis. And like I said, we'll see you once again on Tuesday night. And you can check out my page on either Joe Sixpack Racing, Joe Sixpack Podcast. You can look us up also on Instagram and TikTok. So we got 5 shows coming up between now and the 15th, and we're always looking for guests. So if you got a racing story to tell, it doesn't matter if you're a NASCAR guy or you do RC cars or slot cars, or you're just someone that likes to drive on iRacing and having a good time, we want to talk to you. So reach out to us at the Joe Sixpack Podcast on Facebook and hook up, and we'll find the time that works for you. You can see the Sim Racing Podcast on Twitch for the next 2 weeks, and then in infamy on YouTube, as well as the video is uploaded to Anchor and Spotify. The audio is on Anchor, Spotify, and all the major podcast platforms, including Google, Amazon, and Apple. And once again, thank you, David Duke from Big Duke Sim Racing. We'll see you again on Tuesday. Goodbye.